and welcome to the next 100 Days podcast. My name is Graham Arrowsmith.
And my name's Kevin Appleby. So, Graham, today we have a coach with us, but not only somebody who coaches people in how to run a much better business, but is also the author of the book, Fully Booked Coach. So I am sure we're going to learn a lot about how to become a good business coach today, as well as what benefit you can get from having a business coach.
Yeah, I think you pick all the guests who can help your business, Kevin. That's what it's about. Today we've got Ziv Raviv. That's, as Kevin pointed out earlier, because he's the mathematician, he's got three V's in his name. And Kevin felt really proud at this point, you know, because, you know, he could count up to three. Ziv, welcome to the next...
I can count to three because I'm an accountant.
Well, there you are. Ziv, welcome to the next 100 Days podcast.
Hello, hello, Kevin. Hello, Graham. And hello, listeners. The next 100 days in your businesses are hopefully going to be lit, and I'm excited to be here and share some ideas with you.
Well, Ziv, you're all the way from Israel. And what part of Israel are you living in right now?
The part that is not in the middle of a war.
Good.
So, we are safe. It's been, I don't know if we can say shit show, but it's been one for a long time. And I'm very, very sorry and sad. And the entire thing is tragic. I really don't want to go into that.
No. We just want to know that you're
Thank
there.
You. Thank you.
But, you know, in many ways, the Israelis are incredible people. You sat right in the middle of the Middle East. You're the only democracy there. And you basically are so inventive. And we're really privileged to have you today. And as Kevin said, you've written a book about the fully booked coach. If you think about it, if you're a coach, the last thing you want is to have Tuesday and Thursday afternoons off. I mean, Kevin has every afternoon off.
But, nice to have Tuesday and Thursday afternoons off and do something completely different instead.
Well, maybe that's part of it. But Ziv, where did you get this sort of idea for the fully booked coach? And what does it really tell us about, if you're a coach, what will it help you with?
So first of all, you mentioned days off, and I actually don't mind days off. You could still be fully booked. You know, being fully booked is very different for different people. I've been fully booked as a coach for the last 9 years or so. And during those 9 years, I worked on becoming fully booked and maintaining, keeping, you know, that status of being fully booked. So from my standpoint, being fully booked can mean having about 15 to 18 retainer clients. 15 to 18 is more than enough for me. And I often have 20, and I had even some months with 25 and 27, which was quite difficult. For other clients of ours, some of my clients are coaches, some of them are business owners. So some coaches that I've worked with, they only needed 10. Really, they knew what is enough. They knew that they have other things they want to do. They want to get to their, you know, writing of books and podcasting and other things and just having fun. And I understand that. At some point, I was so busy with my practice that I would do up to 20 meetings a day, some of them 30 minutes, mind you, but still, that could be really tiring, and you don't see any sunlight in a day like that. And it burned me out. So at some point, I actually did what Kevin suggested, implied in a way, which was to take all of my clients and put them into 3 days a week. And only do 3 days of work a week, still with those 15 or 18 clients, but and make enough money overall for my family to save and to buy things I like and whatnot. But I think it's okay to not work every single day. Nowadays, I'm back to being in my power, and I'm recovered from my burnout, and I'm okay with working 5 days a week. So these days it's more like 20.
When you're Ziv, when you're actually working with people as a coach, just give us a couple of examples. I mean, you talked about other coaches. So coaching the coach, and then you talked about entrepreneurs. But okay, I'm an entrepreneur. What is the kind of conversation that I would be normally having with you?
So, there's quite a range of types of coaches, and people position themselves somewhere on the range just naturally. So the range goes from just talking. There are coaches that you'll just talk with them. They will help you. They will ask you smart questions. They're going to help you become accountable. So you'll describe some problem. They will ask you, so what did you consider as a solution? Why is that a good solution? What are you going to do next? What will you do before our next call? And then they will keep you accountable just by asking you these questions. And then next week they'll ask you, so what happened? Did you actually do it? And you will, because someone is looking at things from the outside and is asking you to be accountable, you will become more accountable and you'll do more stuff. So that by itself is good enough. There's a value in this. Now, a coach can also be a mentor, someone that actually walked your path and is maybe even 3 steps ahead of you in terms of the results that they've received. For example, I personally and my team, we launched 300 video courses online in multiple online schools with memberships, subscriptions. I did webinars, I did mobile apps, I did a lot of things that are in the trenches, actual work. So if a client asks me, should I do a webinar in the nighttime or in the daytime? I already did the testing. I can also answer from my experience. And sometimes the client doesn't want me to tell them, what did you have in mind? How are you going to check which one is better? What do you prefer? Like, they just want the answer. They want the mentor to tell them, just do it in the morning, whatever. For example, I don't actually recommend morning webinars, but then, nevertheless.
You tell them to do
So,
it in the morning, but you don't really recommend that. Well, what kind of coach are
no,
you?
I will only tell them from my actual experience. So, and then there's the other range, like all the way to the other side of coaching, which is that you are not just interested in providing the accountability and the smart questions. You're actually interested in taking a client from point A to point B, and you'll do anything you can to help them get there. So instead of telling the client, hey, in order to get from point A to point B, you should do this, or let's find a plan together, you actually step into the trenches with them, and you do anything you can to help them. And doing anything you can sometimes includes actually providing more services. And I chose that route. I call it super coaching, which is coaching plus benefits. So they go into the relationship with me for coaching, but they get a few benefits as a result. And those benefits over the years have grew and grew into a complete marketing stack. So we will not just tell you, hey, you need a new logo. And now, yeah, go and find a logo designer. And you need to fix this on your website. Go find a developer. And this copy is not really good. Go and find a copywriter. Instead of doing that, we just tell them, yeah, and by the next meeting we meet, my team will already send you a version of your logo, new copy, and will fix your website. And it's all included within the coaching.
Wow. Well, I mean, so it's more of a marketing services agency as much as a coach. But I can, up to a point, I can relate to that. And I have to say that you come across as somebody who you'd want to listen to because of your experience. And you talked earlier about webinars and that type of thing. And this sort of one to many kind of presentational technique is that where do you get the sort of push to do that with your life?
It all goes back to what's your business all about? And I think every business is about solving problems and serving people. And the more you know about who are you serving, the better you'll be equipped with the ability to find those people. Because if you're serving everyone, you're serving no one. So if you know what is your micro niche. I call this a micro niche, like that's a better way to start, especially in the next 100 days, just knowing like a small group, a very small group of people that you're serving. If you know that you want to help them, then at some point, the tool reveals itself, right? It makes sense to, after you verify the solution, you worked with a few people, you know it works. It makes sense to now want to scale and show it to more people. So I think the solution and the problem matters. And I found personally as a coach that some problems cannot be solved by a training because people are, for the most part, lazy, afraid to take action, afraid from failing, afraid from doing something wrong, perfectionist, afraid for success. They have all these things going on in their lives, and they want someone to be with them to keep them accountable, but to also be in the trenches with them and get things done. So some problems can only be fixed by coaching, like efficiently, and not by training. So you need to figure out based on the problem, and the webinar is not the goal. The goal is to solve a problem.
I mean, Kevin's done a few webinars to his particular niche, but you talked about micro niches there, Ziv. And one of the things about a micro niche is, I guess, if you're talking about, say, Israel or you're talking about the UK, a micro niche could be, it could be several thousand people, but or do you define it in a slightly different way? I mean, how micro is micro niche?
Great question. First of all, micro niching can be with the people. For example, only the women dentists in the East Coast, whatever.
Yeah.
Micro niching can be with the problem you solve. So I'll solve a problem for many types of business owners, many types of industry, but only this specific problem. Yeah. For example, only how do you get people to stop ghosting you when they just filled out your form, they asked for the service, but then they ghost you. Just that one micro problem, but I will be the expert of that one micro problem that affects many businesses. And then there's doing both of them, right? An example for that would be there's a lady that does, I will teach you how to do Facebook ads only for photographers that have a studio and only women. So like she has dialed in her micro niching. She only talks with women, only photographers, only if you have a studio, and I will teach you how to do Facebook ads.
As a provider of data, I know how difficult that's, you know, from a static source almost, it's quite difficult to sort of niche that out of your data because you maybe don't have the characteristics that you're looking for. I mean, you do women, you probably would photographer, but you know, there's you'd probably fall short of your ideal selection. So if you can't lay your hands on data or a source of information about that niche, what do you, I mean, is that where the webinar comes in? So in other words, you cast your net a little bit and you say who you want and then they come back at you.
So that's a great question, especially when we're dealing with trying to get results fast, like within 100 days. I don't want to cast a large net. I want something that I call findability. So there's three tests on a micro niche, and one of them is findability. I want very high level of findability. I want it to be very easy to find the people. So when we in the dentist example, it's very easy to find a dentist. You just go to Google Maps. You just go to Google. You'll find them. And figuring out if it's a male or a female, if that's really an issue, is also not that hard. A VA for a few dollars an hour could give them a ring and find out, right? I want to choose my micro niche only if I can actually find people in the micro niche efficiently, easily, like very, very easily. In my head, from 1 to 5, if 5 is super easy to find people and collaborate with them, or 1 is super hard, I want 4.5 plus, right? I want it to be super easy. And I'll give you an example of something that is hard. Let's say I want to work with business owners who are introverts.
Right.
Introverts, I'm an introvert myself, even though I do a podcast and whatnot, put me in a party and I will like lose my energy. I will leak energy. I need my alone time and stuff like that. So if you need to find introverts, super hard to find them. There's no Facebook algorithm that will tell you how to target them. There's no, they don't wear a tag. I'm an introvert for the most part. And so in order to get them, you'll need to do a lot of content. You'll do a lot of free stuff. You'll need to cast a wider net, and maybe some of them will be attracted to you, but not in 100 days. That will take a year or two. So if you want 100 days type of results, you should have a high ranking of findability. You should, and I use Sales Navigator to double check that. And back to the question about the size, 3,000 is my bare minimum.
Yeah.
20,000 is my ideal maximum for the first micro niche. If you go for your second micro niche, something I call micro niching sideways, that's okay if you start to grow into bigger micro niches over time, because you can prove that your services work. But at the beginning, 3,000 to 20,000, my first micro niche was a 3,000 micro niche, and we've made over $1 million from 3,000 people.
I presume that. I mean, I've got to say I live some of this myself, but I presume that is because you've taken those that range of numbers and worked out what the likely conversion would be and work and where the money's going to come from in some way related to that volume. Otherwise, you'd be saying 50,000 or something, you know, to actually get the a relative amount of money. So is do you have a, almost like a formula that you use, or is it just straight sort of, you know, email opens and clicks and all that kind of stuff? Or how do you actually go, how do you judge that volume?
So imagine you need to collaborate with someone. You need to interview them on your podcast. You need to interview them on your show, on your video show, on YouTube. You need to interview them on your blog. You need to meet them to ask them, hey, which problem should I solve first? So you have to be in a one-to-one communication with someone. They need to pick up your phone or answer your email for the most part, or message. So if you're in general in the world of outreach, we know that you can expect a 1% reply rate on an outreach campaign. And that's not really good for me. I prefer more than that. Often we get 5 to 10% reply rates on a personalized outreach in a new micro niche. 5 to 10% is really healthy. You can actually figure out micro niching even with 2%. And because it's a micro niche, you can talk to them in a way that they will resonate, because you understand them, because it's easier to figure out a few people that will know you and everyone knows each other and stuff like that. So 3,000 people with a 2% conversions will get you 60 people to collaborate. That's a full year for a weekly show. And as long as you can show up on a weekly basis with a collaboration of sort, any type of collaboration you like, you want to do a podcast, do a podcast. You want to do a video. You want to just meet someone and ask them, how can I serve you? What's your problems? How did you solve this? I really like this. That's a collaboration that will help you be established within the bubble, within the micro niche tribe. Then as long as you can do that once a week, you only need 50. So 3,000 gives you those 50.
I'm sort of getting that now. So basically, you can actually create that business now. As it happens, Kevin and I, we're really lazy. Well, you know, Kevin is extremely lazy, but I mean, but we basically actually over the 10 years we've been doing this, we found that as we've done more podcasts, more people come to us. So it's almost like we become. And I don't think the word's magnetic, but basically people like to put themselves forward to us. And there is, as you know, in the podcasting world, there's this, almost like a sub-niche out there of people who find people for you and so forth. And that kind of helps a little bit as well. But, you know, the one thing is that if you can get 60 people in a niche to work with you initially, you've then got a heck of a baseline to find another 60 within that 2,000 or 3,000 away.
Oh, it gets way easier. Gets way easier. After you have like three famous ones, then you just tell everyone else, hey, we already interviewed this guy and that lady. And then your percentage goes from 2% to 5 or 10.
Yeah. I mean, Kevin, you'll probably recognize this with your niche of chief financial officers.
In the niche of CFOs, Everything you say definitely rings true. So much that we've talked about is directly applicable. How many people do you need to fill a webinar? What time of day do you need to do it? How many people do you need to talk to fill a course up? And all the same things apply. But Ziv, one thing I did want to ask you about, and you like us do a podcast. How does the podcast fit into your business model?
First of all, I do nine different podcasts. So I started in one micro niche, did a few seasons of a podcast, went into the second micro niche, did a few seasons of the podcast. And then I started to do a season a year. And every year I go into one new micro niche and establish myself in it and find clients or decide that this is not for me, the market isn't right, and move on. So some of my podcasts worked for me really well, and we've made $1 million with them. And some of them, we didn't make even $1 and we moved on and decided to not proceed with this. I believe in podcasting because I think that's an amazing way to create a relationship and establish yourself, to provide free value, to be inside someone's head and ear. For a nice stretch of like 30 to 60 minutes, even more. So it just builds so much trust. It's such a fair platform. The content is free, the advice is free. You can make money with that advice. I had people come to me and say, "We've made thousands of dollars because of the free podcast." And once someone makes thousands of dollars through your free advice, they're going to be more inclined to hire you and pay you money. So I think it's a very fair platform, and it's amazing platform. So in my book, The Fully Booked Coach, I talk about how once you choose your micro niche, you want to start to create a free party. And in your free party, you need to collaborate, those 50 times. Sometimes you don't need 50 times to start making money. I actually, on my first podcast, only did 14 episodes before I did my first launch of a program, and it was successful, and we've made like $20,000 on the in that first year, and 11 of them were within the first 100 days, and it was in the days where I didn't know a lot about podcasting and marketing a business. I was just learning the ropes, and then we went on the second year for 20,000, 22,000 to 80,000, and we slowly grew all the way to 550. $1,000 a year with our different podcasts and different niches. So it is the way that podcasting fits into my business model is that it is my choice of way to establish my name, to create relationships. I do it every single time in a different micro niche. I meet new people, I get to help different people. I already have some quite few proofs. I have a lot of testimonials, a lot of specific knowledge on problems that we can solve for people. So if you ask me, hey, should I do Facebook ads? Should I do Google ads or whatnot? Should I get into LinkedIn ads? I can explain why yes, yes, and no, and kind of start walking you through the details of the CTRs and the CPMs and like all the geeky stuff. So I think that podcasting is almost like the beating heart of my system. I don't need to do it every single week anymore for a while. I only need the season, and the season is 10 to 15 episodes in my head. So out of the 52 weeks of a year, I need to put in time in creating a free party and refreshing my free party and meeting more people. But I only need to do it in about 15 weeks of the year.
How different are the niche podcasts that you're
Oh.
running? I mean, are they fairly adjacent? Are they kind of linked to marketing, but just for dentists over here and cobblers over there? I mean, how give us an idea of the kinds of podcasts.
So I'll just start naming a few because the examples will make it really real because they're not very adjacent. Some of them are very far than others. Some of them are very similar. So The first one was actually a podcast for balloon artists, people that make a living from entertaining or decorating with balloons.
Right.
That was the first micro niche. The second one was for kids entertainers. There's actually an overlap. Some balloon people have been dabbling with magic, and some magicians have been dabbling with balloons. So it made sense to kind of educate both on business and have some overlap and allow them to coexist and kind of move from one school to another, from one podcast to another, and basically have one coach for the two micro niches. But then I moved into completely different niches. For example, we have the Generous Marriage podcast on generousmarriage.com. That podcast was like with interviews of couple therapists, sex and intimacy coaches, divorce lawyers. Like the interviews were all about marriage, and that was actually not a micro niche. Mind you, it was a macro niche. And one of the reasons why we had to shut down the operations at some point, because Meta advertising became too expensive to keep on pushing our school and our solutions. At some point, we said, let's take a break. And I moved on to other podcasts and other niches. I created a podcast called Teen Drug Abuse. Teen Drug Abuse, the Teen Drug Abuse podcast, which helps people that have teens in their houses, their parents, and they are abusing drug usage, and help them with ideas and advices. And you can imagine why.
Wait, sorry, Ziv, but it seems to me that you've gone from balloons, balloon shaping. I have my granddaughters over on the weekend, and they'll, you know, if I could do that, I'd be like best granddad ever. You know, truth is, but you've gone from that to the another level, and the other one that you did, and then you went to admittedly a not really a micro niche. Was there a compulsion on your part to say got to be bigger? Did you allow yourself to stray from your own rigorous and actually a really smart strategy of niche marketing?
Yeah. So I did, and I failed. So the first niche was 3,000 people. The second niche, the magician one, 8,000 people. I was very successful. And then I went into a niche that was too big.
Yeah.
Basically, men 35 to 45 that are married, that's way, way too big. And as a result, we only kind of broke even. The next one, the teen drug abuse, that actually is a micro niche. If you count how many therapists help with teen drug abuse, it's probably even a micro niche that is too small. There's actually in America about 1,000 people that are experts in teen drug abuse, not 3,000. And they couldn't afford. They couldn't afford our services as a result of us being at a point in time where we have enough experience and we have our minimal fees. So we just decided to move on. So it was a successful podcast, a successful micro niche, maybe too small, but was not good for us financially. And we created a lot of free resources. We're happy to contribute to the micro niche. There's value that we've created for free for a lot of people, and then we moved on because we also need to make a living.
I'm going to press this point because I am fascinated by your entrepreneurial spirit to see, you know, you do the classic thing, fail fast. You decided, no, that's not for me. I'm not going to go ahead with this. I'm not going to pursue it any further. And you had other, shall we say, macro reasons, the way in which Meta were changing things. But one of the things that strikes me is that, are you using a core set of skills? You talked earlier about, your marketing skills, your copywriting skills. In other words, let's just call it your digital marketing skills, and you're applying that to micro niches. So shall we say the content is broadly written before you infuse it with a knowledge of making balloon shapes?
Actually, I have to say, you know, of course, I hope to contribute based on my experience and knowledge and skills. But I go into a micro niche with an open heart and with a skill that I call listening harder, which is not just to listen, like listening harder, like really listen. And if people tell me, we don't have a problem with business, we have a problem with something else, then that's the solution I want to create for them. Yeah. So I'll give you an example where I failed. I went into a micro niche of plumbers and only like helping plumbers with marketing. Okay. And it's as you mentioned with the sizes, that's a bigger niche. There are more plumbers than magicians and balloon people together. And I wanted to be the guy that solves their advertising problems. And that's how I went into the niche. And I failed miserably with it for a few reasons. The first one is they don't have an advertising problem. Plumbers are busy. Plumbers just have referrals, word of mouth, and they don't have a business mindset where they say, I will, you know, hire five plumbers and send them. They don't do that. They just are freelancers. They go from one call to another, and they're happy with the results they're getting. For the most part, people will just refer people to you, and there's not enough of them even in certain parts of America. So they didn't want to be on a show and to be featured and be honored like that. And they're also kind of shy. If we generalize, right? In marketing, sometimes you have to generalize. They're kind of shy people. They don't want to be in the front of the spotlight and be looked at. And we just looked at the numbers, our KPIs, our key performance indicators of getting people to actually say yes to do the interview. We failed fast in 60 days. We already knew this is not for us, and I moved on. Even on the first micro niche, I thought I will teach them SEO because I had personal experience with my business. I didn't become a business coach because I wanted to be a business coach. I kind of gradually became a business coach because people were asking for advice. I just wanted to give back for the community. And they asked me for stuff that required business coaching. I kind of became a business coach because that was the right service for that niche. But I thought I will teach them SEO, and I was wrong. They did not want to learn SEO. The search engine optimization is technical, and they were not technical people for the most part, and they did not want that. I understood that from listening to, from talking, from doing those interviews. I realized, no way, they will not buy it. Of course, what they actually need is a business coach. They need someone to work with them and show them the ropes and train them personally. That's what they needed, and that's what I provided, and that's how we made $1 million in that niche.
That's really clever stuff. I mean, I don't mind you, Kevin, but that's really smart pivoting. It's under, and as you said earlier, it's listening hard. I mean, I can understand single plumbers, etc. You know, most I've been caught in the funeral director market, and boy, people die, and you know, they just knock on their door, and you know, do I want to mark in? No, not really. I've got a website, but I don't really care about it. It's that kind of niche, I think, Kevin.
Yeah, and that's very true. And there are some niches that need exposure. There are other niches that don't. And being able to understand that niche very, very quickly is a great way forward. But one thing that's really fascinating me there, Ziv, is you're going into these niches. Say you've mentioned launching podcasts. No, you choose a niche, you put your free party together. You're starting from scratch to build something in say 100 days. How do you get the listenership, for example, of the podcast?
That's actually the easy part, I want to say. It's not really easy, but it's the easy part because the interviewee does all the heavy lifting for you because they're already well known in that micro niche. They have established their name in that micro niche, ideally. So they help you because they are proud to be featured on your show. and they go and they talk about you. And also the type of listenerships that you need on a micro niche is way, way smaller than some of the numbers that people are looking for when they want sponsorship ads. So I don't go the sponsorship route. I want to sell coaching or services or programs or solutions. I don't want to make money from a company that says, I want you to say this line for me in your podcast. That's not my business model. It's okay if that's your business model, as long as you have enough listenerships. But if you're going for a micro niche, you won't have enough. So you only need like 10 people to 100 people that listen to your podcast at the beginning for each episode. At some point, our episodes are being listened to between 100 to 1,000 people. That's it. We make our $550K a year from 1,000 downloads per episode max.
And that's because some of those choose to do some work with you.
Exactly. And let's go back to the numbers.
Yeah.
Retainers, fully booked coach, you only need 15 to 20. Some people only need 10. 10 retainers, 15 retainers, 20 retainers. If you're doing something good, they will stick around. They will be glued to the service. They will be happy to stay around because you're getting them results.
And so some presumably of, that's a six-figure income that the coach is getting, or is it much more? Is it mid six figures? Is it half a
so,
million?
I mean, actually, I ran a few options for numbers in the book. So if you only charge $100 an hour, and you do the numbers of 10 people a month, weekly session, and so on, the numbers are, it's hard to get to a higher, you know, income. But you actually can get to it. The numbers are not that bad. As soon as you charge a little bit higher fees than that, you can, like, I've made anything between 100K to 500K as a coach, and with the same amount of clients. Obviously, I needed to raise my fees over time to get to grow my income overall. A coach is not a scalable business as is if you're doing one-to-one. Over time, you want to get to a point where you can also do group coaching or sell other things. But the actual work with people one-to-one teaches you more than anything else about what are the problems that you can try to solve on a macro level.
Yeah.
So I think that it still works really well. And one of the wonderful things about being a coach that is fully booked, that have clients that want to stick around, you only need about 3 to 5 new clients a year.
Do you get your clients from Israel, from the United States, from Europe, everywhere?
Anywhere where people speak the English language and listen to my English language podcasts. So I have a client from Israel. I had about one client from Israel, you know, 1 to 3 clients from Israel from time to time. But for the most part, because it needs to be someone that speaks English, then it's mostly USA.
Yeah, I get you. So, I see. So it's not really the UK either. So people haven't really picked up on you in the UK. So it's...
We are licensed as a company in the UK.
Right.
Okay. But we serve clients in the UK. We serve clients in Canada, in America. 80% of them are in the US.
Wow. What do you think to this, Kevin? Is this a model for you?
Potentially. And I've done coaching from time to time, but I've always done it as really odd bits and pieces around other things. And on occasions I have thought about, well, does coaching become the main thrust of my business? And lots of good ideas are coming out here. And Ziv, I like the idea that you're saying you can pretty much establish a decent business in a micro niche in 100 days. That's powerful stuff. So next 100 days, launch a podcast that's very much niched down and go specialize in giving that particular advice. Yeah.
Ziv, you know what's going to happen, don't you? He's going to try it with, is your dream, Kevin, is to have that podcast on on model railway people, which is kind of a niche. I'm not even sure if it's a micro niche though.
Graham, I have been intending to launch that podcast for the last 12 months, and I haven't quite got round to
No.
it.
Well, I mean, it is Ziv giving you fantastic motivation. Just do it. But I don't know. I mean, if you did the maths of it, Kevin, you probably know that market better than most. But if you talk, you know what I mean by model railway,
Yes.
so basically, Kevin's just nuts about it, and it's one of those things you get when you're a kid and you never really let go. But and I understand it as because I get, I can easily watch model railways, but Kevin wants to do that, and you have so much knowledge in that. More to the point, you know other people in that niche, Kevin. So I just wonder whether or not you've got the motivation now just to do it.
Yeah, they're on a podcast and produce some interesting content on the podcast is one thing. Exactly where to monetize it is the next question, and that's where I haven't quite got to yet.
What do you think it could do then, Ziv?
So first of all, thank you for asking and for sharing this with me. There's actually three tests that I want you to run your micro niche with. The first one was findability. So how easy will it be to find other enthusiastic sticks, people, maybe shop owners, maybe some people that actually have a collection, maybe a museum curator of sort or something like that, maybe an engineer that is in the field of train models and whatnot. So you could interview relevant people. And I think that in this case, I'm not sure. I don't know this niche well enough. Maybe Kevin, you know the Facebook groups and the Reddits, right? And where to find them. So maybe for you, it's already easy to find them. The second test, though, is the braggability test. Braggability. How likely is it that the person you collaborated with will brag about your show? So let's say if I am a shop owner, will I actually say, "Hey, I was featured on the Choo Choo podcast"?
I love
And
that. Give me your name, Kevin.
and then the third test, and because I believe that people in the in this micro niche will like to brag. You know what podcast cannot get people to brag? The podcast that is called the Ugly Skin Disease podcast. Ugly Skin Disease podcast. People are not as likely to say, "I was featured on this show." It's just so you need to choose an angle, right? And then the third test is sellability, which is how likely is it that within a meeting with an interviewee, you could tell them, "Do you have the NXT 2000 that just came out? I have a coupon code for you where you can save 10% on the new NXT 2000 model. Would you like the link?" And if they say, "Yes, I want the link, give me the link. Oh my God, 10%," then sellability is high. So you want sellability as well, overall. And if you can't really figure out the sellability, then I personally don't go into the micro niche. So in your case, you could do some research and validation. You could talk to a shop owner and ask them, "Hey, can you give a 10% discount and give me a 10% commission or for 10 units of this? Because we'll be making this available and I want to collaborate." If you manage to get to strike a collaboration deal relatively efficiently and easily, then I would say, yeah, with more traffic and more people, we will make more money. So at some point, if you actually grow your podcast to a level that is reasonable, you can run the math and see if you want to stick around for more episodes and more of this.
Wow.
Some very good points there. I think that three-step thing is great because a lot of people will dive into a niche because they know a lot of people, they know where to find the people. They can easily get them on the show bragging about it, but they don't think through point number three, where the collaboration deals come from, because they're enthusiasts. This is the issue going into the hobby space, very definitely. How much of it is enthusiasm and the love of the thing versus making a business from it?
So I'll tell you, when will I personally choose to do something like that? Like do a podcast where I know that I will not make money. I will do that when I want to be to prove that I'm passionate and I have other streams of leads and clients. And I just want them to know I'm that passionate. That's when it's strategically a-okay to actually go in and say, yeah, that's my hobby and that's what I'm going to talk about. I'm going to talk about aliens. I'm passionate about space, as some know. I don't know if there are any aliens out there, but I sure would love to know. And I think it's an interesting topic, right? So if I launch.
There's quite a few around Newcastle, as Kevin's demonstrating, really, I suppose. But aliens, that is. So, but no, honestly, we could go on, but you've packed. You can't. I can't believe this, but Ziv, you've packed so much in. You've helped Kevin make a decision, I think. And I, you know, but he has been mulling it over for a year or so. I'm sure it's longer than a year, Kevin. And but genuinely, I'd like to thank you from Kevin and I's point of view for being a guest on the next 100 Days podcast.
So, Graham, we've learned a huge amount in that conversation in so many different places. We've talked about how to enter a niche, how to really niche down to something small so that you're the standout person in there. And I remember learning that, gosh, 15 years ago when we were both part of Internet Business Mastery. It's the same tactic that Jeremy and Jason used to talk about. We've learned about the importance of a podcast. We've learned about ways you use the podcast to monetize your business. And you know, Ziv is a coach as well as that. And we've found out about all the things that Ziv will coach people in.
Yeah, it's Ziv offered us the opportunity of working with him, even for a short period of time, to almost take a different view of our podcast. But if you've just watched or listened to this podcast, it's the 506th episode of the Next 100 Days, and the beauty of it is that we are still attracting high quality individuals like Ziv to share his experience, a really valuable experience. And actually, if you listen back to this podcast, there's a lot of granularity in the sort of step one, two, three, etc., that will really help you think through how you overcome, in this case, a micro niche. But Ziv's got a heck of a lot more going for him. And so, it's been a pleasure dealing with him. And let's just see whether or not we have him back as a guest in the future as well.
I'm sure we will, but that's been a really interesting episode, and there are so many things that Ziv could talk about. I think, yeah, we'll probably have him back.
Yeah, on that promissory note, I've been Graham Arrowsmith.
I've been Kevin Appleby. Goodbye.
Goodbye.